Chapter 18. Avasarala.
What do you think? The Secretary General asked from the upper left pane of the display. On the upper right, Aaron Wright leaned forward a centimeter, ready to jump in if she lost her temper.
You've read the briefing, sir, Avasarala said sweetly. The Secretary General waved his hand in a lazy circle. He was in his early 60s and wore the decades with the elfin charm of a man untroubled by weighty thoughts. The years Avasarala had spent building herself from the treasurer of the Workers' Provident Fund to the district governor of the Maharashtra-Karnataka-Goa Communal Interest Zone, he'd spent as a political prisoner at a minimum security facility in the recently reconstructed Andean cloud forest. The slow, grinding wheels of power had lifted him to celebrity, and his ability to appear to be listening lent him an air of gravity, without the inconvenience of an opinion of his own. Had a man been engineered from birth to be the ideal governmental figurehead, he still wouldn't have achieved the perfection that was Secretary General Esteban Sorrento Gillis.
Political briefs never capture the really important things, the bobblehead said. Tell me what you think.
I think you haven't read the fucking briefs, Avasarala thought. Not that I can really complain. She cleared her throat.
It's all sparring and no fight, sir, Avasarala said. The players are top level. Michel Andor, Carson Santiseverin, Koshu. They brought enough military to show that it's not just the elected monkeys. But so far, the only one who said anything interesting is a marine they brought in to be a flower arrangement. Otherwise, we're all waiting for someone else to say something telling.
And what about, the Secretary General paused and lowered his voice, the alternative hypothesis?
There's activity on Venus, Avasarala said. We still don't know what any of it means. There was a massive upwelling of elemental iron in the northern hemisphere that lasted 14 hours. There has also been a series of volcanic eruptions. Since the planet doesn't have any tectonic motion, we're assuming the protomolecule is doing something in the mantle. But we can't tell what. The brains put together a statistical model that shows the approximate energy output expected for the changes we've seen. It suggests that the overall level of activity is rising about 300% per year over the last 18 months.
The Secretary General nodded, his expression grave. It was almost as if he'd understood any part of what she'd said. Aaron Wright coughed.
Do we have any evidence that ties the activity on Venus to the events on Ganymede? He asked.
We do, Avasarala said. An anomalous energy spike at the same time as the Ganymede attack. But it's only one data point. It might have been a coincidence.
A woman's voice came from the Secretary General's feed, and he nodded. I'm afraid I'm called to duty, he said. You're doing fine work, Avasarala. Damn fine work.
I can't tell you what that means coming from you, sir, she said with a smile. You'd fire me.
Half a beat later, the Secretary General barked out a laugh and wagged his finger at the screen before the green connection ended message took his place. Aaron Wright sat back, his palms pressed to his temples. Avasarala picked up her cup of tea and sipped it with her eyebrows lifted and her gaze on the camera, inviting him to say something. The tea wasn't quite down to tepid.
All right, Aaron Wright said. You win.
We're impeaching him?
He actually chuckled. Wherever he was, it was dark outside his windows, so he was on the same side of the planet that she was. That they were both in night gave the meeting a sense of closeness and intimacy that had more to do with her own exhaustion than anything else.
What do you need to resolve the Venus situation? He asked.
Resolve?
Poor choice of words, he said. From the beginning of this, you've had your eye on Venus, keeping things calm with the Martians, reining in Nguyen.
Notice that, did you?
These talks are stalled, and I'm not going to waste you on babysitting a deadlock. We need clarity, and we need it a month ago. Ask for the resources you need, Kris Jen, and either rule Venus out or get us proof. I'm giving you a blank check.
Retirement at last, she said, laughing. To her surprise, Ehrenreich took it seriously.
If you want, but Venus first. This is the most important question either of us has ever asked. I'm trusting you.
I'll see to it, she said. Ehrenreich nodded and dropped the connection. She leaned forward on her desk, fingertips pressed to her lips. Something had happened. Something had changed. Either Ehrenreich had read enough about Venus to get his own set of the heebie-jeebies, or someone wanted her off the Martian negotiation. Someone with enough pull to get Ehrenreich to kick her upstairs. Did Nguyen have patrons that powerful? Yes. It gave her what she wanted. After all she'd said and meant when she'd said it, she couldn't refuse the project. But the success had a bitter aftertaste. Perhaps she was reading too much into it. God knew she hadn't been getting enough sleep, and fatigue left her paranoid. She checked the time. 10:00 p.m. She wouldn't make it back to Arjun that night. Another morning in the depressing VIP quarters, drinking the weak coffee and pretending to care what the latest ambassador from the Pashweary Autonomous Zone thought about dance music. Screw it, she thought. I need a drink. The Dasahari Lounge catered to the full range in the complex organism that was the United Nations. At the bar, young pages and clerks leaned into the light, laughing too loud and pretending to be more important than they were. It was a mating dance, only slightly more dignified than presenting like a mandrill, but endearing in its own fashion. Roberta Draper, the Martian Marine who'd shat on the table that morning, was among them, a pint glass dwarfed by her hand and an amused expression on her face. Soren would probably be there, if not that night, another time. Avasarala's son would probably have been among them if things had gone differently. In the center of the room, there were tables with built-in terminals to pipe in encrypted information from 1,000 different sources. Privacy baffles kept even the waitstaff from glimpsing over the shoulders of the middle-range administrators drinking their dinners while they worked. And in the back were dark wooden tables in booths that recognized her before she sat down. If anyone below a certain status walked too close, a discreet young man with perfect hair would sweep up and see them to a different table, elsewhere, with less important people. Avasarala sipped her gin and tonic, while the threads of implication wove and rewove themselves. Nguyen couldn't have enough influence to put Ehrenreich against her. Could the Martians have asked that she be removed? She tried to remember who she'd been rude to and how, but no good suspect came to mind. And if they had, what was she going to do about it? Well, if she couldn't be party to the Martian negotiations in an official capacity, she could still have contacts on an informal basis. Avasarala started chuckling even before she knew quite why. She picked up her glass, tapped the table to let it know it was permitted to let someone else sit there, and made her way across the bar. The music was soft arpeggios in a hyper-modern tonal scale, which managed to sound soothing despite itself. The air smelled of perfume too expensive to be applied tastelessly. As she neared the bar, she saw conversations pause, glances pass between one young fount of ambition and another. The old lady, she imagined them saying. What's she doing here? She sat down next to Draper. The big woman looked over at her. There was a light of recognition in her eyes that boded well. She might not know who Avasarala was, but she'd guessed what she was. Smart, then. Perceptive. And fucking hell, the woman was enormous. Not fat, either, just big. Buy you a drink, Sergeant? Avasarala asked. I've had a few too many already, she said, and a moment later, all right. Avasarala lifted an eyebrow, and the bartender quietly gave the marine another glass of whatever she'd been having before. You made quite an impression today, Avasarala said.
I did, Draper said. She seemed serenely unconcerned about it. Thorson's going to ship me out. I'm done here. May just be done.
That's fair. You've accomplished what they wanted from you anyway. Draper looked down at her.
Polynesian blood, Avasarala guessed. Maybe Samoan. Some place that evolution had made humans like mountain ranges. Her eyes were narrowed, and there was a heat to them, an anger. I haven't done shit.
You were here. That's all they needed from you.
What's the point?
They want to convince me that the monster wasn't theirs. One argument they've made is that their own soldiers, meaning you, didn't know about it. By bringing you, they're showing that they aren't afraid to bring you. That's all they need. You could sit around with your thumb up your ass and argue about the offside rule all day. It would be just as good for them. You're a showpiece.
The Marine took it in, then raised an eyebrow.
I don't think I like that, she said.
Yes, well, Avasarala said, Thorson's a cunt. But if you stop working with politicians just for that, you won't have any friends.
The Marine chuckled. Then she laughed. Then, seeing Avasarala's gaze on her own, she sobered.
That thing that killed your friends?
Avasarala said while the Marine was looking her in the eye.
It wasn't one of mine.
Draper's inhalation was sharp. It was like Avasarala had touched a wound, which made sense, because she had. Draper's jaw worked for a second. It wasn't one of ours either.
Well, at least we've got that settled.
It won't do any good, though. They won't do anything, they won't talk about anything. They don't care. You know that? They don't care what happens as long as they all protect their careers and make sure the balance of power isn't tilted the wrong way. None of them fucking care what that thing was or where it came from. The bar around them wasn't silent, but it was quieter. The mating dance was now only the second most interesting thing happening at the bar.
I care, Avasarala said. As a matter of fact, I've just been given a very great deal of latitude in finding out what that thing was.
It wasn't entirely true. She'd been given a huge budget to implicate or rule out Venus, but it was close, and it was the right frame for what she wanted.
Really? Draper said. So what are you going to do?
First thing, I'm going to hire you. I need a liaison with the Martian military. That should be you. Can you handle it?
No one at the bar was talking to anybody now. The room might have been empty. The only sounds were the soft music and Draper's laughter. An older man wearing clove and cinnamon cologne walked by, drawn by the quiet spectacle without knowing what it was.
I'm a Martian Marine, Draper said. Martian. You're UN. Earth. We aren't even citizens of the same planet. You can't hire me.
My name's Christjen Avasarala. Ask around.
They were silent for a moment.
I'm Bobby, Draper said.
Nice to meet you, Bobby. Come work for me.
Can I think about it?
Of course, Avasarala said, and had her terminal send Bobby her private number. So long as when you're done thinking, you'll come work for me.
At the VIP apartments, Avasarala tuned the system to the kind of music Arjun might be listening to just then, if he wasn't already asleep. She fought back the urge to call him. It was late already, and she was just drunk enough to get maudlin. Sobbing into her hand terminal about how much she loved her husband wasn't something she longed to make a habit of. She pulled off her sari and took a long, hot shower. She didn't drink alcohol often. Usually she didn't like how it dulled her mind. That night, it seemed to loosen her up, gave her brain the little extra jazz it needed to see connections. Draper kept her connected to Mars, even if not to the day-by-day slog of the negotiations. That was a good start. There would be other connections, too. Foster and Data Services could be brought in. She'd need to start routing more work through him, build a relationship. It wouldn't do to march in and insist on being his new best friend just because he happened to be managing the encryption requests for Nguyen. A few no-strings-attached cupcakes first, then the hook. Who else could she? Her hand terminal chimed a priority alert. She turned off the water and grabbed a bathrobe, wrapping herself tightly and double-knotting the stay before she accepted the connection. She was years past flashing someone over a hand terminal, no matter how much she'd drunk. The connection came from someone in priority surveillance. The image that flashed up was a middle-aged man with ill-advised mutton-chop whiskers. "Amir, you mad dog! What have you done that they make you work so late?" "Move to Atlanta, miss," the analyst said with a toothy grin. He was the only one who ever called her miss. She hadn't spoken to him in 3 years. "I've just come back from lunch. I had an unscheduled report flagged for you. Contact immediately. I tried your assistant, but he didn't answer." "He's young. He still sleeps sometimes. It's a weakness. Stand by while I set privacy." The moment of friendly banter was over. Avasarala leaned forward, tapping her hand terminal twice to add a layer of encryption. The red icon went green. "Go ahead," she said. "It's from Ganymede, miss. You have a standing order on James Holden." "Yes?" "He's on the move. He made an apparent rendezvous with a local scientist, Praxidiki Mung." "What's Mung?" In Atlanta, Amir transitioned smoothly to a different file. "Botanist, miss. Emigrated to Ganymede with his family when he was a child. Schooled there. Specializes in partial pressure, low-light soybean strains. Divorced, one child. No known connections to the OPA or any established political party." "Go ahead." "Holden, Mang, and Burton have left their ship. They're armed and they've made contact with a small group of private security types. Pinkwater."
"How many?"
"The on-site analyst doesn't say, miss. A small force. Should I query?"
"What lag are we at?"
Amir's brown-black eyes flickered.
41 minutes, 8 seconds, miss."
"Hold the query. If I have anything else, I can send them together." "The on-site analyst reports that Holden negotiated with the private security. Either a last-minute renegotiation or else the whole meeting was extemporaneous. It appears they reached some agreement. The full group proceeded to an unused corridor complex and forced entry."
"A what?"
"A disused access door, miss."
"What the fuck is that supposed to mean? How big is it? Where is it?"
"Should I query?"
"You should go to Ganymede and kick this sorry excuse for an on-site analyst in the balls. Add a clarification request."
"Yes, miss," Amir said with the ghost of a smile. Then suddenly he frowned. "An update. One moment." So, the OPA had something on Ganymede. Maybe something they'd put there. Maybe something they'd found. Either way, this mysterious door made things a degree more interesting. While Amir read through and digested the new update, Avasarala scratched the back of her hand and reevaluated her position. She'd thought Holden was there as an observer. Forward intelligence. That might be wrong. If he'd gone to meet with this Praxidiki Mung, this utterly under-the-radar botanist, the OPA might already know quite a bit about Bobby Draper's monster. Add the fact that Holden's boss had the only known sample of the protomolecule, and a narrative about the Ganymede collapse began to take shape. There were holes in it, though. If the OPA had been playing with a protomolecule, there had been no sign of it. And Fred Johnson's psychological profile didn't match with terrorist attacks. Johnson was old school, and the monster attack was decidedly new. "There's been a firefight, miss. Holden and his people have met armed resistance. They've set a perimeter. The on-site analysts can't approach." "Resistance? I thought this was supposed to be unused. Who the fuck are they shooting at? Shall I query?" "God damn it!" 40 light minutes away, something important was going on, and she was here, in a bedroom that wasn't hers, trying to make sense of it by pressing her ear to the wall. The frustration was a physical sensation. It felt like being crushed. 40 minutes out, 40 minutes back. Whatever she said, whatever order she gave, it would get there almost an hour and a half behind what was clearly a rapidly changing situation. "Pull him in," she said. "Holden, Burton, their Pinkwater friends, and this mysterious botanist. Bring them all in, now." Amir in Atlanta paused. "If they're in a firefight, miss, then send in the dogs, break up the fight, and take them in. We're past surveillance. Get it done." "Yes, miss." "Contact me as soon as it's done." "Yes, miss." She watched Amir's face as he framed the order, confirmed it, sent it out. She could practically imagine the screen, the strokes of his fingers. She willed him to go faster, to press her intent out past the speed of light, and get the damn thing done. "Order's out. As soon as I hear from the on-site analyst, I'll reach you." "I'll be here. If I don't take the connection, try again until I wake up." She dropped the link and sat back. Her brain felt like a swarm of bees. James Holden had changed the game again. The boy had a talent for that, but that in itself made him a known quantity. This other one, this Mung, had come from her blind side. The man might be a mole, or a volunteer, or a stalking goat sent to lead the OPA into a trap. She considered turning off the light, trying to sleep, then abandoned it as a bad bet. Instead, she set up a connection with the UN's Intelligence Research Database. It was an hour and a half at earliest before she'd hear anything more. In the meantime, she wanted to know who Praxidiki Mung was, and why he mattered.